less about what AI can do, but more about how we use it, effectively and accurately to generate a business impact. For me, it has always been about how does it really impact what a business can do with it, or how it impacts some of the things that we build. So always goes back to business outcome.
Hello and a warm welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, professionals, and disruptors who are not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they do not stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, and of course, the little joys of life and work. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms and directories. For this episode, I'm excited to have someone who has had quite a journey in the finance field and technology. From studying economics in the 90s to becoming a pioneer AI/ML architect, Manisha Banthia is now leading Fiserv as Vice President of Data and Analytics. Manisha's 30 years of transformative experience building intelligent financial products that reshape how institutions understand risk, customers, and market opportunities. Her expertise, coupled with deep technical proficiency in AI/ML toolsets and exceptional business acumen, makes Manisha invaluable to the developer community and the fundamental problems that Fiserv is solving at scale. Welcome, Manisha. Delighted to have you on Unusual Suspects.
Thank you for having me at Unusual Suspects. It's a very exciting, Gaurav, to be in a podcast which is called Unusual Suspects. And like you, my background is also in economics, and it has been a great journey for me. It has been shaped. Initially, it was all curiosity as to what lies in data, and eventually, it was followed by adaptability, right? Learning from the data and generating insights from it. So yes, economics in the 1990s, when data almost, everybody was using it for maybe technical analysis of stocks, for financial modeling. So yes, data was really only that at that point of time.
Absolutely. Manisha, of course, we're in the, if I may say, entering the high noon of the AI era, which promises to be a very long, exciting, and of course, disruptive era and age. We should consider ourselves fortunate to be in this era, but also we need to prepare ourselves for the changes. And AI has undoubtedly become the biggest talking point these days. It is embedding our lives. It is used almost in everything that we do, and changes are almost real time. However, that said, this is certainly not a recent phenomenon. It might have become a buzzword now, but it's certainly not a recent phenomenon. From your own perspective, from your own, if you look back now, and you briefly said that you moved from studying economics in the 90s, and now you have gone on to become a pioneering AI/ML architect. If you can tell us, how has the switch and journey worked out for you, and was there a trigger that happened, or was there a eureka moment or something, or was there something that made you make this switch, or was the switch more or less seamless? And when you look back now, you probably think that the switch was one of the best things to have done, because the high noon of AI has just arrived.
Yeah, absolutely, Gaurav. It was one of those moments, right, when I realized we were all doing our what we used to call our computer courses at that point of time. So while I was doing my economics graduating in economics, I also took up, a computer course, and that kind of gave me an insight into, how deep I could go into analyzing something, into querying something, right? So a combination of my business skills, and then, when I had the power of technology with me, that's the switch that worked for me. So yes, like I was saying, it was mainly analysis of stocks or financial modeling. We were using a lot of spreadsheets, but then, then came, databases, data analysis. So I kind of immersed into data. I understood trends, patterns. I like doing all of that, understanding behavior. And that kind of led the foundation for everything that followed. And I moved from, risk analytics to marketing analytics. I was building analytics solutions across global firms. And each role that I played helped me, build and enrich my, if I may say, my toolkit in strategy and data science. So it's been a great journey. It started with a lot of data, and combining it with business for sure, made it very enriching. And yes, now in Pfizer, it is, we are building risk models. We recently launched the Pfizer Small Business Index. We are exploring Gen AI now, agentic AI. But throughout it has been, about how we can drive more meaningful business outcomes. And not just, apply it for the sake of learning a new technology. So yes, the underlying, I think it was my underlying passion for patterns, problem solving, and the business knowledge that I carried, right? That guided me into AI. So the journey has been purposeful and very, very rewarding, and very fortunate, like you said, to enter into this field, way back then without really even realizing at that point of time that AI will become so big. But it's been very rewarding.
Absolutely. It's interesting you talk about doing computer courses in the 90s. I also did a very short course when I was just leaving school. And we did a course, I remember, on COBOL.
That was computer, yes.
Computer business-oriented language. Of course, I didn't continue with it, which I now think probably I should have. And you talked about, understanding patterns. Data, of course, has now become the new oil. From NSE to Oracle to Infosys to Pfizer now, what have been your learnings in AI so far? Because the change is very rapid, and also the pace of obsolescence is very rapid, and we are discovering new things almost every day, from Gen AI to agentic AI, because agentic AI is now taking decisions as opposed to Gen AI, which is where the real change is happening. In your view, how has technology evolved over the years, and where do you see it, say, if you want to look at the crystal ball and gaze into it, where do you see this field in the next 25 years, very briefly?
Yes, so, from NSE to Oracle to Infosys, now Pfizer, it's been a huge change. In NSE, it was more the National Stock Exchange. It was, there was structured data. We could, even with small insight in terms of a wrong transaction, a wrong trade, we could move billions. I was part of an investigations team, and we would sift through trades data to find outliers, right? So a lot of the analysis, like I said, was on Excel sheets. Come to Oracle, which was more a Citibank arm at that point of time, it was called CITL. And I got an exposure to scalable systems and databases, right? This was global Citibank banking and cards data. And we were standardizing at that point of time, something that a lot of people are doing now. We were actually standardizing machine learning programs. We were running complex queries on multidimensional databases to understand cards delinquency or cards defaults. And what Citi was trying to do at that point of time was, have a standardized way of doing machine learning across the globe, across regions. So it gave us an exposure to data at that point of time. And then Infosys was a very different experience where you could see how data was being used across business sectors. So Infosys being what it is, I remember, you know, it was not just banking and financial services. It could be retail, it could be insurance, where they were, you know, harnessing the power of predictive analytics. So, you know, there were use cases linked to forecasting milk supply. There were very high-end market mix models for retailers. And at that point of time, we also had sensor-driven data for agriculture. So suddenly, you know, data had become available across all sectors, and being in Infosys helped me understand how it could be utilized across, you know, across different industries. At Pfizer, it has been different in terms of, you know, it is just not seen as a support function anymore. Data and analytics, it is almost a driver of innovation here. Almost all of the innovation that we do has AI inside. We use it for personalizing experiences, to mitigate fraud. So a whole lot of things it is being used for in Pfizer. And we're also being careful in the sense that we have a strong governance framework. So over the years, I have seen AI move from, you know, rule-based systems to machine learning, and now, you know, very dynamic solutions that we are able to create using Gen AI. So looking ahead to your question, I think looking ahead, AI will become more embedded. That's what we are trying to do in Pfizer as well with AI Insight. So I assume, you know, it will be for everyone else, not just within fintech. It will be more embedded, it will be more autonomous, it will be ambient, right? So it will not only predict outcomes, but it will help me as a modeler, right, co-create solutions. So we are already seeing it. It is, you know, organizations, it's a change in culture in the organization. Organizations are integrating AI into their values. You know, they're not treating it as an add-on. It is almost part of what they build every day. So I just hope, you know, that the next 25 years will be less about what AI can do, but more about how we use it, you know, effectively and accurately to generate a business impact. For me, Gaurav, it has always been about how does it really impact what a business can do with it, or, you know, how it impacts some of the things that we build. So always goes back to business outcome.
Yes, indeed. Manisha, you know, just to help us understand, what is the problem that Pfizer is solving for its customers or clients? And how is it solving? What role does AI play for financial platforms like Pfizer in both in terms of payment solutions as also businesses? After all, AI is for your customers and your clients. AI is supposed, all the solutions that you're providing is supposed to bring in a lot of cost efficiencies as well as also time efficiencies. How are you solving that? Help us understand in the form of a layman's language.
So think of AI as a, you know, a really smart assistant you have that can read data, that can process millions of transactions. It can, you know, detect patterns, and it can also help you make accurate decisions, right? Much faster than, you know, any human can sit on a computer and do. It actually helps you. It assists you do it much faster. So in Pfizer, we power payments and financial services across banks. We also help a lot of merchants and fintechs, right? So how we leverage AI is really in three big ways. First, it helps us personalize. Second, it helps us protect. And the third, it kind of helps us predict and prevent. So what we do, for example, as a fintech, as a financial services firm, we personalize. So for example, when you use your payment app, when you get a reward or a loan offer, it is AI working in the background to tailor these services to your needs. But it is not just based on your behavior. It is your risk profile. It is your preferences. And And we do it in a way that there is a higher chance of conversion, and more importantly, it is relevant to the user, right? So that's what's happening in Pfizer. We personalize, we make it more relevant because we have access to so many data points and not just your banking transactions. And we also, you know, make sure that when we do all of this, we have the data permissions for using the data for a particular purpose. So when we use data, it is a permission is guaranteed to, you know, is linked kind of to how you're going to use the data. What is the purpose of using that analysis for? It also helps us protect. So, for example, when we see a certain large transaction from a new location. We use it for reducing fraud and for improving security. And we also, you know, continuously learn from real-time data to keep our systems step ahead of fraudsters. So we keep, dynamically changing our models to make sure, you know, the frauds reduce. And thirdly, like I said, AI also helps us predict and prevent. So we can, for example, anticipate system overloads. There's a huge infrastructure requirement to generate millions of transactions each day. So we anticipate system overloads. We also, look at merchant issues and take preventive action before it actually affects a customer doing a transaction. So there's a lot going on around prediction and prevention as well. So that's how we use it within Pfizer.
Manisha, you know, Pfizer is not just serving businesses, but also institutions, fintechs, software providers, among others. If I may ask you, what has been the star strategy of the company when it comes to customer acquisition, and how important a role do you see data analytics playing in the same, and also for further operational efficiency? Essentially, how are we going about acquiring more customers and deploying data to optimal use here?
Yes, that's a great question, Gaurav. So our strategy has been, really around few core principles. We have deep domain expertise. So our understanding of banking, of cards, of payments, it really helps us design solutions that are very, very focused on what customer needs are, right? And then when we combine it with the embedded intelligence, and we also have like Pfizer is a product company. It has a platform first approach, right? So we help, we do personalization, but we scale. We do it in a scalable way. To your question, from a customer acquisition standpoint, data analytics is proving to be a complete game changer for us. We are targeting the right segments. We are understanding their needs even before they are articulated. We use advanced analytics and AI models to segment the audiences. We predict a product fit. We tailor their onboarding journeys with us. For example, small businesses may often face a gap, and they do not even realize what solutions could help them scale. So we have a small business index, which tells us, where the market is going. We also have our backbook models. These are powered by data insights, and how we help these customers or these businesses is by bringing visibility into their behavior. So we have value-added services based on their business needs, like cash flows, how the cash flows are going to be coming in or how the cash is going to move out. And we also help them plan their inventory and sales. So a lot of customer segmentation and understanding customer needs across their journey. We not only use it for customer acquisition or a customer development strategy, but we also have a lot of operational efficiency. So we use we have intelligent triage. We reduce onboarding friction, basically deliver more relevant experiences for our customers. So that's how it is. We embed analytics into our product strategy, into customer incidents. I mean, as we build products, we do have a lot of customer incidents. So we embedded analytics into that. And a lot of it now with Gen AI, a lot of our backend processes, have AI embedded as well. So eventually, you know, we are using data not just as a dashboard or a graph, but in all facets of it, be it acquisition or operations efficiency, we are using it as a, if I may call it, a decision maker, right? So that's how it is being used within Pfizer.
Absolutely. You know, Manisha, one of the most visible sectors and also tangible so far as people are concerned is the use of AI in the banking space. And that's projected to grow in multiples over the next few years, growing at a CAGR of more than 30%. Using predictive analytics, what all is AI capable of doing at the moment and how is it helping in predicting, say, for instance, any potential loan defaults? Do we expect delinquency levels to come down significantly because AI will get so very efficient in predicting many of these, Manisha?
Yes, the projection that you just talked about, Gaurav, speaks volumes about the trust and the investment being placed in AI now, right? It is going to be one of the most, it can be a most mature and, one of the most valuable applications of AI will be, of course, in banking and within, the lending space. Today, when we work with banks, they do not ask us for profitability or risk, or attrition, let's say, right? But we are also asking us for insights where they are able to benchmark themselves, against other banks or against the industry overall. So banks, for example, are building their own models, but also asking us, as to how they are benchmarked against other banks. And to your question on loan defaults, the traditional credit scoring was really relying only on past payment behavior and maybe some financial indicators. But with AI, what we are able to do is we look at a broader range of data. We're looking at things not just like repaying your loan, but also your transaction history. We have data available from, credit risk agencies. We have income patterns. We have employment trends in the industry. There's a lot of external market signals that are also coming in. And that was one of the reasons we actually also built a small business index. Now also look at, the entire gig economy, for example, right? So the gig workers, to your question, one is a loan default. The other is how do you even give loans to people who need them? So the gig workers, right, where we do not have a lot of repayment history, how do we collate data across different systems to start sharing this data as well? So it will play a huge role, not just in loan defaults, but also, lending to more people. And what is also changing is a lot of these, lenders are able to assist credit worthiness in near real time. It was not like so before. We did not have data when we needed it. We knew, data a month back or maybe a couple of weeks back. And now we can spot early warning signals. We can see a sudden change of cash flow and irregular repayment behavior. So it's much more dynamic than ever before. And that's how we see Gen AI now helping us read the data faster and interpret a change in a value in a field, right? Much faster than ever before. So it's going to be definitely in the risk space. It is going to be also in the cross sell, upsell, personalization space. A lot of fraud detection. We are starting to use it for optimizing our pricing models as well. So a lot of it is now becoming proactive than reactive. That's how it was before. Now with Gen AI or with AI, it's more proactive. So we are able to stay ahead and manage defaults dynamically, and make decisions that are more faster and more informed with so much more data available, and making it more. AI becomes more context aware, right? And now we see this predictive power, I would say, only becoming stronger, right, than ever before. So very exciting times, Gaurav.
Absolutely. Just a very specific question or something that is that people go through in their personal experiences is, and also the question, the curiosity about artificial intelligence in that experience is, how is artificial intelligence working today to help in the optimization of ATM networks, for instance, and personalizing customer experiences? Also, why does it really matter? Because it's anywhere very personal experience, isn't it?
Yes. So yes, the challenge is really, you know, there, the ATM networks are very expensive to manage. In Pfizer, we serve, you know, almost 10,000 banks and credit unions. And we for some of them, we also manage their ATMs. So we realize, right, you know, on a regular basis, you know, how expensive they are to manage and to service, right? So, for example, what features should the ATM offer? Each feature an ATM offers you, whether it is, you know, withdrawal of cash or getting a check deposit, each one carries a cost or maintenance of that ATM. The other side is, you know, how we serve our customers in terms of, do we have timely cash replenishment? Is there a downtime? You know, are we able to manage the traffic? Is it secure enough? Right? Power usage. So a whole lot of things go behind, you know, maintaining an ATM and making it work, you know, absolutely without any faults at all, right? So it's like a zero fault expectation. So yes, it is personal, like you said. We are almost interacting with the network on a one-on-one basis. So we help it really in two ways. One is on the customer side, and the second, we see it is, of course, in terms of doing it, you know, managing the demand, etc., better at an ATM. So how much cash to load, avoiding, you know, stockouts or over servicing. You know, one of our key programs in Pfizer is to avoid, you know, if an ATM downtime is noticed for a few minutes, you know, a service team runs to look at it. So we've actually looked at behavior across ATMs, across locations to see, you know, how we can service it very, very efficiently and not just reduce downtime, but also make sure our service costs are not high. The other side is the personalization of experiences, right? So if an ATM remembers you, you know, it remembers your transaction types or, you know, if it makes your experience faster or more intuitive, that's how it is going to be, you know, with on ATMs and it in the digital banking channels, right? Personalization will go further in terms of giving you very tailored product recommendations or alerts. But in an ATM, it will be, you know, it remembers you, it remembers your preferred transaction types and you know, just gets done things much faster. So, you know, the customer today is looking, it is expecting more, the customers are expecting more convenience. But most importantly, what we have to remember is they want relevance because we are being bombarded, right, every day with offers and suggestions and recommendations. But if we can make it relevant, you know, that is what will make our customers be loyal to us. So that's what we are doing on the ATM side. We are making it smarter and simpler, really. So that's how we are seeing it evolve in the space of ATMs.
Absolutely. You know, Manisha, one thing that I always wanted to ask you is, you know, we one of the things that AI does is to personalize and personalizing customer experience. And we have this seeing this particularly in the content consumption space, just for as a sake of an illustration. You know, you have these recommendation engines on YouTube or any of your playlists on Spotify, et cetera, depending on it reads your pattern of consuming content very rapidly. Now we are reaching a stage where that is getting, you know, it's that effect and has multiplied several times. The thing here is that, you know, your AI is scaling up personalization, but at the same time, we are reaching a stage of hyper personalization now. Is there something that needs to be done to avoid some kind of customer fatigue? Because what is happening is that at some point in time, humans or customers would say that, let me take a decision and I will just not want to use AI. How do you balance the two?
So, you know, traditionally, I mean, one is, you know, AI, just like I said, bombards you with these recommendations. there has to be thought behind all of this. So one of the traditional things that we use, Gaurav, is for example, there's an age-old marketing, analysis that is done. For example, it's called what we do with it is we find customer preferences by segments. So it's called conjoint analysis. So my point really being is that you can use a lot of traditional machine learning techniques, while AI will read the data faster and provide recommendations faster. What we could, for example, do, we sometimes combine it with some of the traditional analysis like conjoint, where we understand customer preferences by segments, right? So, surveys are run, customer preferences are understood. Imagine the combination of, if you were to buy a credit card or, you were to have a payment platform that you like, right? So what are the kind of offers or rewards or what are the kind of features that you need on that platform? So it is a lot of, statistical analysis is that is done behind the scenes to score each of these features and to understand the customer spending habits, their saving goals, their lifestyle. So based on each one of these preferences, a card is designed, a payment application is designed based specifically on your needs. So to your point, I think it is about not just running a program that predicts, the next best thing to offer, but also having very solid data points on customers, on their, preferences, knowing your customer just beyond, what they need right now. It is also who they are. So a lot of that in terms of, when do you transact most, where is your location, what is your transaction history, all of that is there. But I think, understanding customer behavior behind the scenes in a more traditional AI manner actually helps us do this much better now. So the hyper personalization, so the future is beyond scale, but scaling it thoughtfully is what I think, will help us eventually. Making it faster, but not making it relevant is not going to help us. So put thought behind it, understand each customer, put them in their segments and understand their preferences and keep the human at the center of the equation, right? That's what it will make it more thoughtful.
Absolutely. And finally, Manisha, Fiserv was recently among the Time 100 most influential companies of 2025. Many congratulations for that. Just to understand, what is the company doing things differently from its peers and competitors? And what's in store for the future, Manisha?
Yes, we are incredibly honored to be listed in the Times 100 Most Influential Companies of 2025. And this is our first time in our 40-year history. Being recognized by Time reflects the scale of what we do at Fiserv and the impact that we are making across financial ecosystems and communities. Some of the key factors that led to this achievement were Clover's, one of our point-of-sale platforms, right? Clover's widespread adoption. So our point-of-sale platform powers nearly 800,000 merchants across small and mid-sized businesses. We have unparalleled reach and reliability. We touch nearly 100% of U.S. households. We talk about this 90 billion annual transactions. And we have about 6 million merchant locations. And like I said earlier, we have almost 10,000 financial institutions / banks and credit unions. So unparalleled reach and reliability. And we've been very innovative with our payments. So we are championing direct pay models that bypass traditional card rails. We are cutting merchant costs and redefining the payments experience. So innovative embedded payments is another reason why we are differentiated. And beyond these milestones, our mission is we move more than money, we move lives forward. So during the Small Business Month, we highlighted how our work empowers entrepreneurs and niche businesses, showing that our technology fuels real progress. So what is Fiserv doing differently? We are shifting from being a provider to being a partner, right? We deliver future-first solutions. We deeply embed intelligence and AI and automation. And whether it is Clover's expansion, you know, its advanced AI-powered decisioning, or our recent pilot with stablecoins, right? The goal is simple. We anticipate and exceed client and community needs. So what's coming up next is our global expansion of Clover and embedded payment systems. And then we push stablecoin tokenization. We are pioneering interoperability between FI USD and PayPal USD. And lastly, right, most importantly, and a lot of what this discussion has been about today, accelerating AI adoption through our data analytics teams, through our AI council, our governance councils, and, you know, creating smarter solutions and richer customer experiences. So that's where we are going, Gaurav.
Absolutely, Manisha. Now, thank you so much for sharing your deep insights and perspective on a range of issues. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation with us.
Thank you, Gaurav. It was a pleasure.